Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time listening to the Guelph Politicast, welcome. Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or are just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today I talked to Dr. Fred Doms, an emeritus professor at the University of Guelph, who's written a new book called Conflict and Compromise, Politics and Planning in Guelph 2000 to 2015. It's all the biggest issues in Guelph's planning conundrums of the last 16 years in one 300-page volume, and I talked to Dr. Doms about how he managed to pull it all together in this week's Guelph Politicast, but first, my usual public service announcement. Guelph Politico is crowdfunded through Patreon, where you can contribute on a per-monthly basis for any amount you feel comfortable using PayPal or your credit card, and all that money goes to maintaining a locally sourced independent media outlet in Guelph called Guelph Politico. Through your generous donations, you'll be paying to keep the Politicast going, as well as regular coverage of city council and politics in and around and concerning the Royal City. For more details, click on the giant orange P on the right-hand side of the Guelph Politico page, or go to patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. And now on with the show. If you read this blog regularly, or any Guelph media outlet for that matter, you know that the city has issues with planning. So many issues you can't even know where to begin sometimes. There's City Hall, the Recycling Center, the Transit Hub, and the granddaddy of them all, Walmart, just to name a few. Of course, the situation has become political over the years. Some see this as an example of government not being able to do anything right. Others see it as an overly ambitious but well-meaning city government trying to do its best. What the situation needs is some clarity, so enter educator and author Fred Doms. Doms is a professor emeritus, founding member, and former chair of the Department of Geography at the University of Guelph, and former acting dean of the College of Social Science. He was also a member for 11 years and chair of Guelph's Planning Advisory Committee. Bringing his not inconsiderable experience to bear on issues of planning in Guelph, he's authored Conflict and Compromise, an exhaustive look at many of the key issues surrounding a wide variety of city planning projects. In conversation with Doms, we talked about why he wanted to write a book, why it's so hard to learn about what's going on behind the scenes at City Hall, if any one narrative is right about the city's ability to plan, and why he's fairly skeptical about whether or not our city council is capable of governing in the city's best interest no matter who's sitting on it. So I caught up with Fred Doms on the front porch of his house in Guelph. So Fred Doms, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
I wanted to just begin by reading some of the other titles that you have written or contributed to. So you've done Wellington County, Picturesque Ontario Towns, Beautiful Ontario Towns, The Growth and Planning of Guelph in the 20th Century, and that's a collection, Guelph Perspectives on a Century of Change.
Yeah, right.
And then The Heart of the Country. But this is a bit different. This is diving into a much more murkier and much more immediate world of what's going on in local politics. So what made you want to chronicle this?
Well, I was for 11 years a member and a chair of the City of Guelph Planning Advisory Committee, mm-hmm. and I got to know all the councillors and the builders and developers and many, many citizens who generally came out to object to almost any change that anybody suggested. And that got me going. But I started in 1962. I worked for Dryden and Smith and Kitchener. We did all the planning for Wellington and Waterloo County, including the City of Guelph. Mm-hmm. And that really got me involved. And I did my master's. I did a master's planning thesis and my doctoral thesis, so urban geography, a doctoral. Then I came to Guelph and taught urban geography and planning and actually stuff about small towns for many, many years. But having, I guess, sat through what inspired this most was suffering through the years of the Kate Quarry councils, mm-hmm. and I would sit and look at these things on TV and think, what is going on with these people? Are they just trying to be nasty and negative, or do they really care about the city? And that really got me interested. And I know a number of politicians and have for years, so I've tended to follow Guelph Council, and I thought it would be nice to document all this, and mm-hmm. so it's written down and somebody has it. So. Mm-hmm. But as I said earlier, now I'm going to go back to writing about small towns and things.
you said you were on the planning committee for 11 years. How does that overlap with the timeline of the book, which is 2015?
Way, way back. I came to Guelph in 66. I think I got on to planning advisory 3 or 4 years later. At first, they wouldn't accept me because, quote, I knew too much, and it was all builders, developers, and real estate lawyers. And finally, council changed, and I did get on the planning advisory committee, which is gone. The province allowed cities to get rid of planning advisory committees, and now it's incestuous. A committee of council looks at things and then recommends to the same group of people. Planning advisory committee, we had lawyer, builder, developer, business people, academic. It was completely independent of council, and we would then make recommendations, and we didn't have nearly as many meetings going half the night. It worked very well, and why they abolished it is beyond me. So that's another reason that I felt I'd better write something and document what's been happening.
I think someone might phrase that as sort of culling the bureaucracy of it as, you know, taking, you know, I think the way a shrewd politician might frame that is, you know, you're taking out a layer of government that is stopping something from proceeding, that is stopping developments from getting going, which is a common refrain, as chronicled in your book, in terms of development getting going. It's like there's too much bureaucracy, there's too much, you know, discussion and court action and all this.
Well, a lot of that in Guelph, I'm afraid, comes from citizen groups and people taking things to the OMB. Now, the beauty of the Planning Advisory Committee was that we often solved these things. Carl Hamilton, who was also an alderman and a lawyer, was on there, and we would hear their proposals and all the people who were speaking against them, and then we'd send them away and say, go off and talk to Carl and come back next month with a solution. And 80% of the time it would be resolved. No OMB hearings, no council sitting all night debating. And for reasons that still escape me, the province said we don't need planning advisory committees anymore. A lot of cities abolished them, including Guelph. And I think it wasn't an extra layer of bureaucracy. It actually cut down on time and effort to get development going. But I'm just bitching about the past now, sorry. But that's one of the main reasons I wanted to write this.
Right.
Just to sort of, you know, what's going on now? And you talk about development, I think, well, if you've read this thing, way too much development, way too fast in Guelph. We don't have the water resources, taxes keep going up, but you've got a big group of politicians who simply want to grow.
And part of that, too, is mandated from outside of the city, by the province.
Yeah, well, I mean, the places to grow legislation is saying Guelph has to be a growth node. We've got to have much of the growth now in the built-up area, which is wonderful, except you try to do something higher density than what you had in the past in a built-up area, and people come out of the woodwork to oppose it.
Right.
And half the time, you then get an OMB hearing. It drags on for years and years, and often things don't get done. The developers just give up and say, we can't do this, and they quit. Now, other things do get done, but it's a double-edged sword.
Well, I do want to talk about, obviously, the book.
Yeah.
And I think it plays into, not the book, but I think it covers well that there seems to be two narratives going on in the city. One is that Guelph is the next best thing to Shangri-La. We have low unemployment. Great quality of life, great cultural events, all this. And then the other narrative is the city's going to hell in a fiscal handcart being piloted by councillors who are, you know, throwing away money like it's a rap video. In terms of covering the cold hard facts, is one of those narratives more correct than the other, or are they both sort of equally right and wrong?
Yeah, I think there is truth in both of them. I think Guelph has done incredibly well to be green and attractive. You talk to people, the reason they come to live in Guelph is because it is a nice place in which to live. When I was a professor at the university for many years, I'd ask, why did you people come to U of G? We know it's a wonderful city. We love the university because, you know, we can actually find professors in their departments to talk to us rather than at UW or Toronto where there are empty halls in the departments and nobody ever, except maybe, you know, TAs ever talk to us. And I think the quality of life, which a number of councils, particularly the ones that Karen Farbridge was mayor of, have really worked at that. The other side of it is, of course, the development industry, businesses, and so on, feel that Guelph should be not wasting money on parks or environmental regulations or wet dry recycling. Mm-hmm. We should be putting all our efforts into attracting new industry, developing new industrial sites, and growing. And I think that we're beyond the point that Guelph's going to be able to have enough water to sustain much more growth.
Which is a major topic of concern with the Monday meeting and James Gordon's motion.
I know, yeah. Well, again, when I worked for Dryden and Smith in 1962, we had very well-known hydrologists studying the situation in Guelph. Mm-hmm. And they did extensive surveys, and they came to the conclusion that if it were lucky, Guelph's groundwater resources could sustain growth to 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which we're well past.
We're well past, and you know what's happened with the watering restrictions, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change is going to get hotter, not cooler. Mm-hmm. It's going to get worse. And nobody's sort of looking, well, yes, James Gordon and people are looking at that seriously, but a lot of other people aren't. They're ignoring it. They're saying, drill more wells. Well, if you take more water out of the same aquifer, mm-hmm. there's still no water down there.
Right.
So.
And I think this is something that came up at a recent sort of working group about places to grow, is that we don't know. That's exploration hasn't been done. No one's crunched the numbers about how many people, how much water do we drink and use over lifetimes. So when, you know, when people are maybe talking about too much due process in the situation, there are other areas where it almost seems there's not enough due process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they have looked at, I think we've reduced water reduction per capita in Guelph over mm-hmm. the last few years, which is good. But if you keep adding more people and more industry, all of which use a lot of water, it keeps draining the resource. Mm-hmm. While I'm on this, the other thing is, when I was a planning advisor, we had these reports on the pathetic state of all our underground services.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, half of the sewage and drain and stormwater pipes are no longer pipes. They're just sort of tunnels through the clay where rusted iron had been, and the water runs through this out here two or three times, coldest day in winter. The road collapses. The thing is, you know, fallen down into that cavity, and these poor workers are out here freezing trying to repair it. But we're going to have to spend millions and millions on repairing sewers and, well, also water lines and all those sorts of things. But because that's not sexy, mm-hmm. nobody sees these things. Councils don't spend enough money on it.
Mm-hmm. And to give listeners context, we're just on the outside of Exhibition Park here.
Yeah, so we're in one of the oldest parts of the city. Parts, exactly. This house is built in 1860, so...
almost as old as well.
1880.
Still pretty old.
Yeah, and there are some around us that are older.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's one of the older streets. But the reports we had, much of the, you consider the old downtown area,
right.
The underground services are shot. Now, every time they've done a new road, they've replaced.
Mm-hmm.
There's an awful lot of places nobody's done a new road, and they have not replaced
right.
the stormwater and the sanitary sewers. So this is a real big problem.
Do you think that perhaps we have been focused too much on what's on the surface in terms of these big development battles over things like Walmart, over things like the new City Hall, building a new museum and that kind of thing, and we haven't been focused enough on just keeping the roads in shape and making sure water can be delivered from point A to point B?
Oh yeah, I agree. But you see, again, a new City Hall, or for some councillors, a Walmart or something, is very good. It's going to attract boats, it's going to make people happy. Paving some suburban streets or paving streets in the middle of the city, you know, that only go one block,
mm-hmm.
yeah, not many voters there, that doesn't really matter. And so nothing gets done. And I mean, you've driven up and down lots of our little streets and bumps and holes and potholes, and it's quite a mess.
Right. In terms of the book itself, you mentioned that Kate Quarry's administration was a particular, let's call it bugaboo, as you were watching City Hall. You go before that, though, and start at 2000, which was Karen Farbridge,
yep.
the first beginning of her first term.
Yeah.
What was your idea in starting from there? Because it's just because it's the turn of the century, or because Karen Farbridge has become, or she has been probably the most, she is the most consistent figure
yeah.
in City Hall since 2000.
Well, I started, it was partly turn of the century, partly it was just the end of Joe Young's reign,
mm-hmm.
and I sort of finished up with that, and then got into Firebridge, and then got into Quarry, and then Firebridge, and I'm glad I stopped before the present administration. A lot of people are asking me, why didn't you write about this or that? And I said, I had to stop somewhere. I would stop at the end of the election.
Right.
If I hadn't, it would be twice as long,
because
there's an awful lot of stuff now that's right. happening that I could comment on, which...
A lot of it is ongoing and perhaps not appropriate to be chronicled in a book, at least yet, because it is still ongoing.
Yeah, it's still contemporary, and I think, you know, write letters to the editor and have blogs as you do and things, but no, in 10 years, look back and see what's happened.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting, looking backwards to the Quarry years, that, I mean, I do remember the contentiousness of that.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't even have to pay too careful attention to the news to be aware of it.
Oh, it was terrible, yeah. I have hundreds of pages on my computer of the disputes and the quotes and things, none, you know, a very small proportion of which wound up in this book, but it was every council meeting was like a major drama under that regime. And unfortunately, and I name people in the book, a reasonable number of people on that council voted things down because they had been approved by the previous council.
Right.
There was no good or logical reason. Say, turning down the library, not buying the old post office.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever argued why. It's just, well, previous council did this, it must be wrong, and therefore we'll overturn it. We still haven't got a library.
Mm-hmm.
And Lord knows when we'll get one. So
it denotes an element of partisanship we tend to think doesn't enter into city politics. Yeah. And we see that, you know, you quote Jerry Barker quite a bit, at least near the end of the book.
Right.
And he's sort of driven this narrative of the Gang of Seven or the Group
yes.
of Seven, and whose, you know, numbers are, depending on the situation, are always shifting. But
yeah.
it does seem like some people do want to paint this as a you versus us proposition, which seems to defeat the purpose of having an apolitical council.
Yeah, but they're not apolitical. These people, as I said in the conclusion, if they would put aside their own personal agenda and look at what's best for the citizens of Guelph, they wouldn't always vote the way they do. But if somebody gets elected on a platform of, we're open for business, we're going to have Walmart, we're going to invite more development, then they're going to push that.
Right.
Even though maybe it'd be better to spend... We were just in Royal City Park, or no, actually, Riverside Park the other day, and looking at the absolutely beautiful flower clock and the way everything is manicured along the river and how well they take care of it. I'm saying, this is a great place for the city of Guelph to be spending money, and you've got to give them credit for that. We've done extremely well on parks all over the city, and that's one of the things that really attracts people to this community.
And that's something, again, that came up in that working group, is somebody said, well, where is the Royal City Park for the South End? Or, you know, there's a river that passes through, but, I mean, it's something equivalent that is a great big open space that draws people to events or just enjoying it.
Yeah, well, you know, part of it is opportunity. Is there
right.
a reasonable sort of location? There's the whole Courtright waterfall area. I mean, when you get down, what is it, Courtright Road.
Right.
There's a vast area where you can walk, you can see deer, you can see all kinds of animals. I have a friend who walks 2 hours there every morning, and it's gorgeous, but it's not like the manicured Royal City down there or the Riverside Park and so on, because they're little creeks and swamp. There isn't a great river flowing through.
Right.
But where we've got rivers, I mean, all the way, you know, from the Hanlon Expressway all the way out to Victoria Road, you can walk along the river and have beauty and find mushrooms and flowers and all sorts of things. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
And coyotes.
Yes, unfortunately. You had to draw the line somewhere, and I did note in one of your last chapters in the book is like other things.
Yeah.
Where did you make that distinction? I mean, what issues did you decide needed to have the most exploration in your book?
Well, basically the ones that affected everybody in the city. So termites, water, foliage, leaf coverage, policies on housing, policies on transportation, economic policies, industrial policies, all these things. I mean, okay, so a police chief resigned, so she got a paragraph. This poor girl was killed in a city washroom. Well, mm-hmm. I think it deserved a mention, but it's not a major thing. So that was it. I tried to, you know, give most of the space to things that were big issues that affect everybody in the city. But then these other things happened, like the underpass where the trucks kept losing their tops because somebody right. goofed on the design. That was worthy of a mention.
Sure.
The delay on renovating the Via Rail station. Mm-hmm. City basically didn't put enough money in the budget to have it renovated the year they should. And they had to put off letting contracts for another year, and it's not going to be done now till next spring or something. Yeah. It's crazy.
That whole situation with the hub is particularly crazy because if you look at how that is laid out, that wasn't how it was planned to be laid out in terms of all the amenities it was supposed to have. There were supposed to be public washrooms and staff rooms for
the Oh, that's drivers. The other one, downtown rowdiness and washrooms. I've written a letter to, hopefully it'll be in the Trib, about I walk around all these parks in Guelph. None of the washrooms are open. They're mm-hmm. all locked. In 12 years of debating, we don't have accessible city washrooms in the downtown. Any European city, even small podunk ones, have good, clean washrooms that are maintained. Not Guelph. We won't spend the money on it.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me crazy.
I wonder if that's the appearance and the rowdiness again of the bar patrons and you rile up I think a certain constituency when you say we're going to open public washrooms in the core so that we can make sure people aren't peeing in alleys and
what would you rather have? Spend sure. a bit of money and have these washrooms? Let's take some money out of the development department's budget and put it into keeping washrooms clean and open, which they don't do.
Right.
And whether it's not all students either. I mean,
no.
I know a lot of people come from out of town. And even when UAG kids aren't here, the downtown's just about as bad. My wife goes to market early Saturday, and it is a disgusting mess when you walk down Wilson Street and try to go to the market. And these poor city people are out here cleaning. And they haven't solved it, I'm afraid. But
mm-hmm. And that can be said of so many different issues. I wanted to ask about trying to research some of this because you do mention at a point that you're trying to find out information about different matters, agreements, comings and goings of right. city staff, but you hit a wall because they label it confidential.
Yeah,
and I think this is something I have myself been frustrated with covering City Hall, is that there seems to be a lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes that we don't hear about because it gets slapped with the confidentiality.
Well, I was just talking to my neighbor again. A friend of his was quote walked out of their position at City Hall, and somebody else was walked into it, and the so-called walking out didn't even make the local press. The person who was walked in got a little promotion, and so that name right. was put in. But from a number of friends and former students, at one point, half of the planning staff were my former students, and I knew what was going on down there. City Hall has been a toxic work environment. I have a friend who just left after 15 years there and went out to the waterworks people, where he's much, much happier doing some admin job. And he said the situation in City Hall is toxic.
The building City Hall, not the entire government structure. The building, inside the building itself.
Inside the building, the people, the staff, the counselors, who knows? I mean, I think there's a lot more interference by counselors and mayors than there should be, and I think that's always been the case. I mean, if you read, I don't believe all of Barker's blogs, but there might be a bit of truth in some of this. This is an example. I asked, could you please give me a list of the five most important people in city administration, or the most important people in city administration, 2000, 2010, 2015, each of those five-year intervals.
Mm-hmm.
I sent three or four, and I had luck with all the other city departments. I got information, it came very nicely, I was very happy. Personnel did not even reply.
Mm-hmm.
I sent two or three more, not even a reply. I finally sent one to Ann Papert, pointing out that I'd been involved in a various number of things and was quite happy to go to Freedom of Information and raise a bit of hell to get the data. Mm-hmm. Within 1 hour, I had an email with a copy to me from her to the head of personnel saying, cough up this information. And that's where this appendix came from.
Right.
That shows
the list of all the staff.
Yeah, from 5 in 2000 to 22 in 2015. And that's just the top people.
Mm-hmm.
God knows how. Well, I started looking at the people making over 100 grand a year, and there were so many. I couldn't possibly do it that way. So I thought, well, so they gave me a spreadsheet, and I got the list of names. There's no way I would get the salaries. No way I would get the buyouts that people were given when they, mm-hmm. quote, sought other opportunities or disappeared or walked out. And I think that's a great big nasty black hole downtown, that all sorts of things are happening to staff and we don't know why.
Mm-hmm. The amount of turnover, and it's just turnover, because there's a lot of turnover in a lot of sectors, but I mean, we're talking about top people.
Yeah, this isn't just minions. This is people who have major administrative responsibilities. One guy they hired, and I think he lasted one day and disappeared. He's listed in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, there's something wrong with the way they're organizing things if this happens. But you're not going to find out. Nobody is going to sit down and tell you, well, here's why we got rid of so-and-so, and this is what we gave him to keep his mouth shut when he left.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I think, a real problem in the city.
And it begs the question, how do we try and find that out too? And even I've been, I scratch my own head about that, because you can say to people, hey, speak to me off the record, and get background, and people aren't going to talk about it.
No.
So it's not just that we know there's something going on there, but for some strange reason nobody wants to say what's going on.
Yeah, you just don't know why people have left or been terminated, and some of them, really high powered people, have not stayed very long. And I've known some of them were very, very competent, but they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So
you do say at the end, you're skeptical that council can govern in the best interest of the people.
Yep.
On a scale of 1 to 10.
Oh, you're putting me.
Because, I think those of us that watch council carefully know that it's not the gong show that some people want to paint it as.
Oh, no, no.
It, there is quite usually a great deal of consensus. There is
compromise.
Compromise and conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the title of the book.
Exactly, yeah.
But I think we all have days where we, deal with government or some aspect. I had to get my health card renewed recently, and that was a pain.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, the streets still get plowed.
Yep.
The buses still run.
Yep.
Most of the time.
Parks are well maintained.
Yeah.
I agree. I think day-to-day operations in the city are pretty good. What I worry about are the major long-term policy that they come up with, and the planning, and particularly the number of plans of subdivision that get approved, the number of new industries that get, we're not doing that well on that actually, but get lured to the city. If you look, I just look at my Hanlon Park controversy thing, and they haven't got nearly the number of industries in there or the revenue out of the Hanlon area that they thought they would when they pushed it.
Right.
Now, eventually they may do fine, but I think it's these big issues that affect people into the future. I think day to day, it's not the politicians; it's the staff and administration that are keeping things humming. The same as federal, it's the civil service that keeps things going. It's not the members of parliament, and I worry about the partisanship amongst people in City Hall right now. Here's James Gordon. He wants to bring a motion about Nestle.
Mm-hmm.
And the mayor says, before he even brings it, I'm not going to vote for this. It's premature. You shouldn't bring it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that mayor got elected on what a platform of we're open for business, da-da-da-da. And you can just see that coming through. I don't think that should be happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the mayor should keep his mouth shut about things like that. And they should then debate them at council and see what comes out.
It's interesting, too, because in the case of Mayor Guthrie, it plays into the expectation people had when they elected him. But there is also a great many people who don't think he's gone far enough.
Well, I know. But I think if you look at the one statistic that I researched very carefully, they're talking about our tax rates in Guelph are mm-hmm. way out of control.
Right.
That is not true. We're right in the middle of the pack for municipalities about our size. And I think for what we pay, we get pretty good service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, forgetting about the underground things that they've just neglected. Someday somebody's going to pay big time for all that.
Right.
But we are not outrageously taxed, and yet Guthrie got in on the platform that taxes are far, far too high, we've got to cut them back, etc. And to me, that's sort of selling false goods.
Mm-hmm.
But about half the council, I mean, about six of them got in on that kind of platform, about seven got in on the, we're running a nice green community, it's a great place in which to live, people like golf. Now, fortunately, as you said, they often do compromise and people back off a bit, and they have made some pretty reasonable decisions about big issues. But some of the public statements and letters to the editor that some of the current councillors sent are just outrageous. And I shouldn't be talking about this, it's not in the book. But I just think that some of the opinions expressed by people who write about politics are just plain stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion.
It does bring us back around to the two narratives, and they're both kind of entrenched. And it's I do wonder how long we will see the compromise continue and the conflict rear its head a bit stronger, because even before this year's budget process starts, we have people saying, oh, it's going to be the worst budget
ever.
In terms of decisions that have to be made. And
yep.
That's a very political move in and of itself.
Oh, indeed. Well, if you look at the history, you know, after a number of years of Farbridge, the right got organized and said, we're going to turf her.
Mm.
And they did, and they put in a council with a completely different emphasis. And after, 3 years of that, then the, you might call them left-wingers, got really organized and said, we're going to get rid of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is, after the term of this administration, you might see a major pushback by people on the other side saying they're going too far. Now, it depends on what they accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they haven't brought in these draconian tax reductions, and I don't think they're going to be able to, because there are so many fixed costs.
Right.
You know, you think of union agreements, you think of all the personnel and so forth, they're not going to change their contracts. So
yeah.
These are fixed costs already, and then you've got to run the city and, you know, pay the staff, and they've got their union contracts. I don't think that anybody is going to make major, major reductions in taxes. Now, it could be the people who wanted that would say, well, throw the bums out because they didn't do it.
Mm.
Or it could be the other side saying, well, they're putting too much emphasis on this. Let's see if we can get in a more moderate council with maybe 8 or 9 people who vote the way we like.
Mm.
I mean, look at Toronto after Ford.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so who knows?
I will say maybe a bit disingenuous to compare Cam Guthrie to Rob Ford.
Oh, I know.
Although I know people tried in 2014.
Yeah.
No,
I don't think one should do that. I think Guthrie probably has good motivations. He feels that what he's doing is right for the city, and he's got five or six people on council who came in with the same kind of attitude, and he's moving forward in good faith. I'm just not impressed by some of his public utterances and the way he tries to push things. So
we'll make that the last word, and we'll save it for the next book.
Yeah. Oh, dear. I hope I haven't babbled on too much.
Oh, no, not at all. I enjoyed it. And Fred Toms, thank you for the book, and thank you for joining me today.
Well, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
And once again, that was Dr. Fred Toms. The professor will be officially launching Conflict and Compromise on Tuesday, September 27th at 7 p.m. at the Bookshelf E-Bar in conversation with former City Councilor Ian Finlay, former Mayor Karen Farbridge, and Urban Planning PhD candidate Audrey Jamal. You can, however, buy the book right now at the Bookshelf, and you can also buy it online at amazon.ca. And that's it for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. There is also the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And thank you to everyone who has donated so far. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.